a lot of the population is programmed by the Walmart effect, or just in general, they're looking for deals. So they tend to screw themselves by going after the cheapest thing. If you go out into the market and you start looking up like self-directed IRAs or solo 401ks, I can give you a dozen places where you can get them for free. And guess what? You get exactly what you pay for.
If you have over $200,000 sitting stagnant in your bank, retirement account, or home equity, then you're literally losing money. On this show, you learn how to get that money working for you consistently and conservatively. Learn to grow your nest egg with your host, Sean Winslow. Let's dive in.
What's going on, everyone? I'm Sean Winslow, and this is the Multifamily Money Podcast. Welcome back to another Finance Fridays episode. Got an interview on this week, and we get into everything passive investing through your retirement funds. I've talked about this before, using self-directed IRAs and self-directed solo Ks. Well, this individual actually offers a different product in the same realm. However, it offers a lot more pros without the cons. Some of the cons, if you're not familiar with self-directed IRAs, is that there's something called a UBIT tax. And I'm not going to get too much into the weeds. Obviously, consult your tax advisor, CPA, but a UBIT tax is levied upon any type of investment that it comes from, that you use your retirement funds that has leverage, right? So typically in real estate syndication is going to use leverage, right? Because you're going to use debt. You're going to use a loan to purchase the property. And so typically you're probably levered at around 70, 75% LTV, meaning you can see quite a bit of tax for per 100,000. I think you mentioned you could see around 40K plus in tax. Like, that's a huge tax bill. Now, obviously, with depreciation, you can offset a lot of this, and depreciation is shared when you get into a syndication, when you're a limited partner. However, wouldn't you want to use that depreciation for a taxable account to offset? Why do you have to use it in traditionally a non-taxable account? But in this case, it is a taxable account when it comes to investing in something that uses leverage. So what his product uses, which is called the EQRP, you do not have to pay UBIT tax. It is set up for a company that, like a corporation or an LLC, any type of entity that at least has the means to do business. You might not be conducting business at this moment in terms of generating revenue, like a profit, but it has the means to do so. And you might be thinking, yeah, but isn't that similar to like a solo 401k, a uni K? Yes, but no. It's the solo 401k, the solo K, whatever you want to call it, is similar in the sense that it is for a business, right? So, but it's only can be used for a sole proprietor, right? So it only can have one employee or your spouse. So it can't be for a business that wants to scale and add employees. As soon as that happens, you go against the IRS tax code, right? And then they can fine and tax you, and it can be a lot of money. However, with the EQRP, this product allows you to have employees and allows you to scale and still invest in real estate syndications while using leverage and not be taxed a UBIT tax. So this is a really cool product. We dive deep into it, and it was just a really, really fun discussion with Damien. I think you'll get a lot out of it. So it's just a great episode to just discover more ways that we can invest and grow our wealth, especially when it comes to using retirement accounts. Maybe you have a retirement account at an old employer that you can, an old 401k that you can roll over and then invest directly into real estate, which is what I love to do. I've personally done it, and anyone who has questions about it, I love to tell them how I did it and why I think it's a great way to go. All right, but let's keep this short. And as always, if you're getting any value, one, please subscribe, please leave a rating and review. That's how we get in front of more ears and eyes. And then also, if you did get value, please share it with someone that you think could also get value. That would mean a lot for both them and I. And as always, check out what we're doing when it comes to real estate investing. Check us out at greenbriercg.com. And if you want to potentially see future deals, we got to establish a relationship, and that involves you going to our website, registering with clicking on the Invest With Us Now button, registering, and then we can set up a call and we can get that all underway. So check that out if you're interested. And let's get into the show. Hey, Damien, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, Sean, it's good to see you, man. It's great to be here.
Awesome. Let's just get right into it. Everyone loves a good origin story. So who's Damien? Where'd he come from, and what is he up to these days?
Damien's half polar bear and half moose, came from Alaska. I don't know what to say. I mean, it's the interesting part of the story. I guess Alaska is interesting because when you grow up in Alaska, you literally can be eaten by things that if you make a mistake, you get eaten by your, you know, the, I have been chased by moose a couple of times and that's not fun, especially when you're on a sled or at any point, it's like a giant horse, but pissed off. So had that happen. I think part of the origin story is just that I was so removed from civilization. It creates a unique way to grow up. And in that space, something inside me, as most entrepreneurs could probably attest to, it really drove me to solve problems. And the first problem I had at 11 that I remember was my parents told me we were broke. We had no money for anything. And I got really mad. And so I said, well, I'm going to do something. So I started a business and hired my parents. And that was the first of 60 plus businesses that I've launched. You can't stop it. Like my brain doesn't stop. I see a problem and I'm thinking, what business can we start and fix that problem? I think that's one of the great things in society now. There are so many problems in every direction. Like people say, well, I don't know what to do. I'm like, look around. There are problems everywhere. And back 20 years ago, I found real estate. I saw one of these infomercials, like when they used to have, before the internet really got big or Facebook, I was on some infomercial and I was like, well, look at that seminar in Florida for real estate. And Robert Kiyosaki is speaking. So I flew out there and I just bought my first house, rental house. And I bought everybody's tapes. And I said, this is awesome. And I actually listened to them and then did the stuff and bought 150 houses over 5 years.
Wow.
I think that it's really interesting that the origin is really not just one moment in time. It's this process of being authentic and going deep. That was the first phase of it. And then, of course, I built up this giant amount of money and a portfolio and thought I was King Kong and lost $5 million in 2008 and had to start over. So that's part of the story too. Just because everything goes good. If you ever hear anybody that's only done good for 20 or 25 years and they've never lost anything, they're lying. Like that's just not real, right? So, and that led to what I'm doing today. There's a lot of stuff there. You can dig into the idea of what happens when you lose 25 million and you only have 20. Like that's a process and a problem. I was actually told one of the funniest things about that process. A mentor of mine said, if you lose a million, it's your problem. If you lose 10 million, it's your problem. If you lose 100 million, it's the bank's problem. And my problem was I didn't have $100 million. That was the bank's problem. It was all my problem. So if you're going to do it, if you're going to think, you may as well think big. I think Donald Trump said that.
It makes a lot of sense, right? Like, why not? It generally takes the same amount of work, just at a bigger scale.
It is. There's just a thermostat. I was reading, I think it was Harv Eker's book maybe, or it was The Millionaire Mindset. I forget it. I was reading it in Canada for my birthday a few years ago. And it referenced the money mindset. And there's this thermostat that you have. And it's really the upper limit. Like a lot of people think, especially here in Alabama, there's a lot of people that think there's a ceiling, a glass ceiling, and they can't go through it. And they tell, I heard a lot of women say this, and probably a lot of guys too. But there's this idea that you can only have a certain thing or you can hit a certain level and that's it because you're in a caste system. Like there's a structure of what you're limited to. And that's just dumb. It's dumb thinking, but it's been baked into people. And your thermostat is really what you are capable of being. And so something Robert Kiyosaki said years ago was this idea of be, do, have, and you got to become something and then you can do the thing based on who you are and then you'll have the thing. Most people are like, well, just give me the money. I'm like, you're an idiot. That doesn't solve anything. No. You have to do something to earn it and you have to become something to even do the thing. Otherwise, you'll sabotage, which is why lottery winners lose their money. So,
and they're depressed, right?
It's super depressing.
Like fulfillment out of it, yeah.
In every way, like when you actually work for something, it's one of the problems with the snowflake society where people are like, oh, well, I just want to have the gimmies.
Right. Gimme.
It doesn't. You're always going to be lost. And you see that a lot with people that are second and third generation wealth. They are lost. They have millions of dollars. They have trust funds and they're a disaster.
Yeah. And that, I love the thermostat comment too. I don't know if you're familiar with Ed Milet, but he talks a lot about that and how to increase your thermostat is to surround yourself with people that have a higher thermostat than you. And you know, eventually you get up there. So I love that part. So what are you doing now today?
Surrounding myself with people that are way hotter than me.
Right.
I mean, yeah. You can take that a lot of different ways. You know, it's kind of funny, but no, I mean, it's true.
They both work.
Absolutely. Like surrounding yourself. It's one of the reasons I'm in masterminds and I bring people in and it's not just people that have more money. It's people that are healthier than me. It's people that have more integrity than me. And I think I have a lot of integrity. And then when I'm around people, my question always is this somebody that I could trust my life with and give all my money to and leave for 5 years? And occasionally I'm like, yes, there's a few people in my life where I could walk away and I could come back 10 years from now and I would be completely comfortable and never have to call back in. And I think everybody should be asking the question, who are the people that are around you? Are they fitter? Are they healthier? Are they richer? Are they more abundant minded than you? Because if they're not, you're not going to change. Like you're just going to stay just like them. And I think about that with my health. It's kind of a funny thing. And you know, who do I hang out with? The problem is I hang out by myself a lot. So there's not this influence. What I should be doing is hanging out at the gym with super healthy people.
Right.
Not people that are just throwing giant weights around, but people that are genuinely healthy, people that are vibrant, people that are glowing. And that's the same thing with wealth. It's a great, great thing to think about. It's probably the most powerful thing, just being conscious of your environment and then saying, what do I want to be? Great. Just put myself in the middle of that because you will become that. It's osmosis, man. It just happens.
100%. It's like the whole, I want to get in shape, but my trainer's not in shape.
That's like, a great idea, by the way. What the hell are people thinking? I have a fat trainer. I'm like, this, what?
I see it all the time though. It's like, it just doesn't make any sense. All right. Well, let's get into the fun stuff, or at least what I think is fun. As I told you, I come from a finance background, and as I've mentioned on this podcast to my listeners before, one of the cool things about real estate is you can use retirement funds to invest. Most people know the traditional ways of like the self-directed IRA, self-directed solo 401ks, but your business is awesome and you have a unique way to do it that offers the pros of those two, but not the cons that they come with. So if you would jump into that, I'd love that.
Yeah. One of the things that happens by default is most people just look at whatever's happening mainstream or whatever they've heard about. And the problem with mainstream or what they've heard about is it's usually marketing and it's not really the full picture. So you have to go deeper into the source. There's lots of information out there. Like, we're not lacking for information. I mean, Google, we're drowning in information. We're starving for wisdom. And so when I wrote the book, the QRP book a decade ago, I wrote it with the idea that it would give people the truth. And it was based on the tax code. It was based on real English. If you ever read the tax code, it's really not English. It's, I don't know what it is, man. It's freaking Latinese. It's very confusing. Yeah. So I wrote this book and it was at the same time I was really thinking and looking at retirement accounts. And this happened because I watched both my parents play by the rules and woke up one day retired and broke. They didn't have control. They didn't really have a clue. They just followed the system and the system screwed them. And I'm not really big on being a victim. I'm just honestly very focused on reality and being practical. The system is set up to feed on people. It's not set up to make you rich. Wall Street is not in business to make you rich. It's there to get rich off of you. So, and people that are in finance, I think there's some people that are really honest people, but it doesn't mean that the system is set up to be honest. It's set up to do what it does. It's a business. So going back to the retirement accounts, there's a lot of different options. Most people would say, oh, I have a 401k. And so they end up leaving a company and they end up putting it into an IRA or something. And then they're doing the same stuff. Maybe they find self-directed. What happens is by default, people end up using the wrong tool, especially in real estate. They end up using a self-directed IRA. That's the first mistake, because with leveraged real estate, which is what we love about real estate, there's debt. You end up getting hit with UBIT tax most of the time when these projects or properties sell. And so that becomes a huge problem for most IRA investors. And then they say, well, I didn't know about that because nobody told me. Well, nobody's there to tell you. Like the IRA companies, they don't say, here, let me give you tax advice. They just say, we will be in charge of custodying your assets. And so you go, great, that must be all I need to know, until you get a tax bill, which is really painful inside of an IRA. So the alternative to that is the 401k space. And we've heard a lot of different things that are out there. The solo 401ks, the uni 401ks, solo Ks, like there's just a lot of different things. And all of those have a place and a potential use. What I realized is that they were missing pieces. There's missing liability protections in them. They never worked if you hired anybody. In fact, the rules changed a couple of years ago. You can't even hire a part-time person and have a solo 401k or a solo K anymore. So you always have to be small. And people go, well, I'm just having contractors. Yeah. Have you talked to the IRS recently? They're really cracking down on people that just have contractors that look like employees. So how do you fix that? Well, there wasn't a solution until the EQRP was created and basically was a dynamic type of 401k that allowed people to have control of their assets, their retirement assets, IRA, 401k, 457 assets. It allowed them to have assets and you can hire people because the EQRP allows you to have employees. No other product does because it's complicated. And if you do have employees, what traditional financial institutions will say is, oh yeah, we can set up a 401k. And guess what? You have mutual fund A, B, C, D, E, and F. And that's it. So that didn't solve the problem because you want to do something outside of the Wall Street. So EQRP was set up for people that wanted to do real estate, crypto, gold, private equity, and they also wanted to be able to grow and not be stuck being small. It's a massive difference between the two. For most people, they're like, oh, but there's a lot of confusion because marketing, especially firms that do solo 401ks and things, they don't want anybody to know that there's something different that actually is expansive and dynamic where you can grow. And that's what we're trying to get out and make sure people know.
That's awesome because you can actually scale with it. So I feel like that's why most people get into a business, right? They want to scale their business. Most people don't want to just stay themselves. Like, that's just a job, in my opinion. So why not just go work for someone else, right?
Yeah. One of the things that's happening, I had a friend of mine that had a bunch of contractors. They were employees. I mean, they were actually employees. They worked for him. And then the IRS came back and said, wait a second, he didn't want to pay payroll taxes, which is why people have contractors. I mean, it's one of the reasons. And sometimes people are contractors because they work for different people and okay, they're contractors. But he ended up having the IRS come back at him and say, hey, you know what? You owe us, I think it was like $200,000 or $300,000 in payroll, and they do not screw around. They come after you hard. Not only that, having a solo 401k there, they disqualified the whole thing. So it was a disaster. And that's what people are facing. They go, well, nobody knows, or it's contractors, and they'll never. IRS is getting smarter with AI. And it's not because the humans are smarter. They're having a hard time getting really smart people because people are like, why would I want to work for the IRS? I can work for finance or big tech and make like 10 times as much. So what they're doing is they're using automation, they're using technology, and they're investing billions and billions of dollars in that space to go after people that are circumventing the system. So I think there's going to be a lot of people that have these solo 401ks that are actually going to get crushed and disqualified, which is, you're talking 50, 60% tax with penalties. That's not a good strategy.
No, not at all. So this is for someone that has a business set up, correct? They have some type of LLC or whatever it happens to be. They have a business in place.
It could be an LLC. It could be Sean doing consulting. It could be Sean managing your rental property. I mean, it's almost anything. So there's also a misconception that you have to have people go, well, I don't have a business. I'm like, you literally are a business. I forget who said that, Jim Rohn or Brian Tracy. Right. It's like Sean Inc. Like, okay, or Sean, sole proprietor. So having a business this is America, by the way. This is not Russia, where you probably get thrown in jail for having a business. But in America, you are a business the day that you show up and say, I'm willing to exchange time for money.
Yeah, it's true. So does it have to generate revenue? Say like I'm Sean Inc. or whatever. Does it need to generate some type of revenue in order to establish this?
It's a great question. Any business from the IRS's perspective has to have the potential to make revenue. The reason that in business is, I mean, they're meant to have the potential to create revenue. If you look at companies, I've had tons of companies that made nothing, in fact, lost money for years. Amazon is a great example, not my company, but they lost money. That's definitely a business. So you can lose money. If you have the potential to do, like most businesses have a J curve if they're successful, where they lose money for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, and then they turn out of it. That's very normal. So you have to have something that has the potential. There is no rule. And I've heard CPAs that want to say things that they don't really know what they're talking about. They'll say, yeah, your business has to have at least $10,000 or $100,000 in revenue. And I'm like, there is no rule that says that. And so they just make things up. You don't have to have something with a certain amount of revenue. What you can't do is you can't go form an LLC and say, look, I've got a business, wink, wink. Like, it's got to be something that has the ability to make money. But people will play those games. There's a firm that was founded by some partners at Arthur Anderson that went defunct because they were screwing people through Enron. And they'll play those kind of games. Let's set up a bunch of entities. And then that's what counts. No, it doesn't. The IRS will come after you. And so if you want to bet your entire retirement on that, then play that game. But otherwise, you can play black and white and do really well.
Oh, that's awesome. And so just to give a visual to the listeners, what I'm thinking is how you could start one and say you're not generating any revenue, but you still want to make contributions is you have that LLC or whatever entity set up. And maybe you had an old 401k from a previous employer that you no longer work with. You could roll that over into this and then invest from there, along with making contributions as well. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. In fact, that's probably what a majority of people do. There are a number of people that say, okay, I have nothing. I want to start. I want to use this as a tax shelter. And so they'll make new contributions from the get-go. Most people come in with retirement rollover money, old IRAs. A lot of them, Sean, come in with self-directed IRAs that are already invested in real estate, and they realize, holy crap, I'm going to get hit with UBIT tax. So they'll roll over the IRA asset. They'll actually roll over the whole IRA with the assets into an EQRP, and then they're exempt from the UBIT tax off that leveraged property. So that's where most people start because they have an immediate problem. As an example, you invest $100,000 in a deal, and most deals are probably 70% leveraged. On those type of deals, let's say you invested 100 grand into syndication or your own deal. If that 100 turned into 200 and it was 70% leveraged, you're probably talking $20,000 to $25,000 in UBIT tax in most cases. And people have no idea that's coming. That includes Roth IRAs. So people are like, wait a second, I thought this never got taxed. And then they get a tax bill. We've had people come in with $400,000 tax bills 2 months earlier. If they had come to us 2 months earlier, we could have fixed this the day before they sold the properties. It would have been a zero tax bill. I mean, it's what I would suggest to people is that taxes are optional. You just need better advisors.
Yeah. A lot of people don't know about this, right? It goes to the whole thing. Part of the reason why I left quote unquote Wall Street is that they're not out there for the clients. They're out there for their own wallet. And so stuff like this is not shared. We're conditioned to think there's one way to grow wealth. Like you mentioned with your parents, it's that traditional way of plowing everything you have into a 401k that gives you ABC mutual fund, right? And that's all there is to it. In this arena too, we're told that it's only self-directed IRAs, self-directed solo Ks. And that's just not the case. There is this avenue as well. And it just comes down to the fact that there's not as much money in it for the bigger firms that have the marketing dollars. So we're just not going to learn about it.
That's true. And one of the things that you have to realize, everybody does, that the name of the game is AUM. It's assets under management. It's how many dollars we can get inside of our system so we can peel off a half a point or whatever it is every year, and then we can go golf. Yeah. And so that's, if you look at the system, why do financial advisors seem like they have a lot of free time? Because they have 100 or 200 million or a billion under management, and they basically have people inside of automated systems. They have a lot of free time and they get their fees every month, every year. There is definitely a different system. You're just not going to hear about it. Here's one of the things that I've noticed. A lot of the population is programmed by the Walmart effect, or just in general, they're looking for deals. So they tend to screw themselves by going after the cheapest thing. And so if you go out into the market and you start looking up like self-directed IRAs or solo 401ks, I can give you a dozen places where you can get them for free. And guess what? You get exactly what you pay for. You get automated bots, and you get systems that are not going to give you advice or mentoring or counsel or education. And if it's education, it's going to basically be automated education to buy more of their crap. So you have to really think about it. This is a big lesson for most of the population, that you really have to decide what you're going to spend money on. And I just had a client, made me crazy. This guy did not want to spend $300 last year on filing a form that we happen to do these forms. We do thousands of them a year. And he didn't want to spend a few hundred dollars. So he did it himself. And he did it wrong, and he didn't send it in with tracking because he was doing it all himself. He's worth a few million dollars, and he just got a $61,000 penalty letter from the IRS. And he goes, oh, looks like I did this form wrong. And I was like, yep. So how much did it cost you to save that $300? And people do that stuff, people that file their own taxes. I mean, I've done it, but I haven't done it in a long time because I used to be dumb about that. And I'm calling anybody doing their own taxes. I don't care if you're an employee. People say, well, why should I do that? Why would I want to do my own taxes? Because you're not a freaking accountant. And even if you are, you should be doing something that makes you money. Doing your taxes does not make you money. And people, they miss that. Smart people are the worst. They think they should do everything. I used to be my own lawyer, my own accountant. Those are really good ideas, by the way, to stay broke. And people will do it.
Hey, I used to do it too.
We're trained to self-reliance. This is America, land of rugged individualism. Yeah. Okay. How about cheating? Let's do that. It's called conspiring and cooperating, but we're told in school that's you flunk out. And yet that's how you get rich. That's how you stay rich. That's how you get free. It's team. It's leverage with other people, and you do well together. So we've got to break those conventional molds.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's who, not how. And it's leveraging other people's knowledge. It's like whatever business you're in, people are paying you, whether it's a service or good, because you're the provider or professional at it. So in retrospect, you should be paying for another service or good that you don't have anything to do with. And it makes complete sense, but we're our own worst enemy sometimes. So
we are, and people are trained from the time we're children. We're meant to get A's and get everything right and learn everything and then do it all ourselves. And sometimes in school, you're actually taught to go and do projects with other people. And yet most of the system, that's called cheating. And then people are trained again to go out and find the cheapest thing. And they go, look, it's all the same because we're taught that everything's a commodity. Who teaches us that? The giant institutions that want to drive down prices and then collect you as one of their data points. That's all it is.
Oh yeah. Our education system, this could be a whole nother episode. It's just insane. It's there to create workers, not independent thinkers. And that's really unfortunate.
Especially dangerous now, given that AI and robotics and 3D printing and everything is going to disrupt. I mean, you think about, you know what the biggest job in America, the largest number of people that are employed in one sector is? It's trucking. It's all the drivers. And what's going away with automated electric semis? Trucking. So what are these guys and gals that are making $60,000, $80,000, $100,000 a year going to do? They're not going to be making $60,000, $80,000, $100,000 because that job's going away. And that's going away sooner than we think. And so it is going to be about thinking. And yet, are we taught to think? No, we're taught memorization. That is not going to lead us into the future. People have to disrupt themselves because the whole system is going to disrupt you. It's what's happening with a lot of stuff that we've seen the last couple of years with this whole COVID thing. A lot of things are getting disrupted. Zoom came out of nowhere. What we're doing right now, we're Zooming. Zoom went from like zero to hero, and all of a sudden they went 10x in like a month because of the pandemic. Well, now everybody's used to this 3D. Well, why are we going to offices? I mean, things are being disrupted faster than we can adapt to it. And our brains are very linear. How we've evolved biologically is very linear, and everything is changing to exponential, and we don't know how to deal with it. So it's terrifying, which is why people are lashing out and saying, save us, fix it. You got to fix yourself. And you got to do it by conspiring with teams. Otherwise, you're going to get run over.
I couldn't agree more. And yeah, like you said, we're on Zoom. Like only probably you and I and others like us knew about it because we did this type of thing before. But other than that, no one knew, you know, what Zoom was. This is when opportunities can present themselves. But you're right. Most people think linear, so they don't even see them until it's too late. And then they're flushed down the system, right? But before I get off the topic at hand, I wanted to ask, I didn't realize that people should do this. I didn't realize they were doing it. But if you're in a self-directed IRA, you actually have the ability to then roll it over into EQRP, even if you're already in, say, like a real estate syndication.
Yeah, you can move it over. So regardless of the situation, and that's really cool to say, I can say that I don't care what your situation is. I don't care if you're by yourself. I don't care if you live in Romania. I don't care if you have 50 or 100 employees. It doesn't make any difference. This can be fixed. And so you can move the assets. People are like, ah, I'm already stuck. People will call me and they're like, hey, this apartment that I'm an investor in, is we're selling it. It's selling in a week. And I used my IRA and I'm like, okay, we got a week. We can do this. So we'll move that asset from their IRA into the EQRP that we set up for them. And we'll have the sponsor, whoever's running the deal, update the titling. When that thing sells, they're not paying tax. I mean, I've had people save $20,000 with a 15-minute phone call. And they're like, screw Geico. This is way better.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
It's way more than 15%. Yeah.
Way more than 15%, man. That's the power of information and knowledge that's applied. Like a lot of people have known about this. I mean, there are literally 100,000 people that have a copy of the QRP book that I wrote a decade ago in different versions. And how many of them have read it? How many of them have paid UBIT tax? The guy that said, I paid $400,000. That's my bill from a couple of months ago. He had the damn book, but he hadn't read it. So I'm pretty sure that was the most expensive book he never read. So we got to prioritize things. And this is something that will bite you if you don't know the truth.
Yeah. And that goes to your point of no one really knowing about this, right? So hats off to you for getting on and obviously promoting this. It's something that more people need to know. Cause I knew about it, but not like, I definitely don't know it like as intimately as I should, right?
Sean, CPAs don't even know about it. Like you ask a CPA and people will say, my CPA has never heard of this. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure your CPA doesn't even barely know what a 401k is. Like I say that tongue in cheek, but the truth is it's a very narrow part of the tax code. And there's very few people that spend all their time doing it. And those people are not out there doing podcasts and stuff, talking about it. It's a narrow thing. So you have to be willing to say, okay, I'm going to educate my CPA, or I'm going to give them a copy of the QRP book or whatever. Most people are too busy. CPAs make their money doing tax returns and strategy. They don't make money by figuring out the 401 and 408 part of the tax code. Like that is just not something that's going to move their dial. It's going to give them brain damage.
True. If you don't mind, could you give like a high level overview of like the steps it takes for someone to make the switch or even just start from scratch?
We figured out it's an appropriate fit. So we'll do a strategy session and then we'll build the plan and all the different pieces, the entities that are part of it. We do everything. So it's basically a 15-minute application process and then we build everything. And then once that's built, the accounts are set up. Like I said, the entities are set up, the bank accounts, we do all of that stuff. So basically somebody has this 15-minute call and then one, they say, okay, here's my assets and we help them move them over. As far as I know, we're the only ones in the country that do this entire process, literally on the phone for hours and hours with the Fidelities and the Quests and all these different places. We do all that stuff. Nobody else does it because they don't charge enough money. And I say that very seriously. If you're not paying very much, guess what? Who's going to be doing all the work? You. Like there's an appropriate exchange. I remember Brendan Burchard, who's a fairly big influencer out there, and he had a mastermind and he said, we charge an appropriate amount for what this is. Well, so do we. And if you go, well, you charge more. We charge more than most people in this 401k space. Why? Because we charge the appropriate amount for what we do. We get all the assets over. And then once they're over, you've got a checkbook and you can go do whatever you want, invest how you want. And then we provide the customer service and compliance. So we do all the filings and we're doing everything. And when people have questions, they don't end up on an FAQ page. They end up talking to us. I mean, there's a whole team of people. And so really what happens is people end up going through an application and then they have control and power and a team. And that's the process. You want to make contributions, call us and say, okay, I want to do a contribution, or go to the website, pick the amount you want to put in. Here's how much money you have to make. So you've got, everybody's got automation built in, and we've also got human beings. And that's one of the biggest strategic differences in any business today is human beings and human touch and the human capital. Most companies are doing the exact opposite. They're trying to automate everything. And I, for one, am getting really pissed off every time I try to call, whether it's Marriott or American Airlines or Fidelity or whatever. It's freaking phone trees and wait, and we'll call you back in 4 hours. Like, okay, seriously, my plane ticket went from $400 to $1,200. How are you guys not able to hire people? But they're all looking at their bottom line for shareholders. And so that's the experience. You want to have no competition, hire some people, have some great people that answer the phone.
I can't agree with you more. Yeah. They're always looking to cut that overhead, cut those fixed costs as fast and as much as they can. And it ends up just killing their customer service. And then to your point on fees too, I couldn't agree more. Like, I run into that sometimes, not often, but there'll be like investors that are looking at deals and they see what we get paid. And it's like, well, we're getting paid because we're providing you value, right? We're providing you the benefits of real estate without the hassles of doing this yourself. So of course we need to get paid. And like, I get the whole thing. Like we were talking about before, how we're just, the industry conditions you how it wants. And like, over the, probably the past decade, it's been like, fees are evil, fees are evil. Like, well, yeah, if you're not getting justly value for those fees, then 100%, like the whole thing you said about financial advisors, it's all about how big is their book, how big is their AUM, so they can play golf. Yeah, maybe they don't deserve that fees, but ones that are actually providing you a service of great value, then fees are justified and you shouldn't look at it just like, oh, those fees are too high. That's my two cents on it.
I love it, man. I totally agree with you. And when I see real estate deals, we've done some deals. We have some deals we're doing this year that have appropriate fees. And sometimes people, actually very rarely anymore, do people look at those, because the people that end up in our ecosystem are sophisticated enough to know that they want whoever's bringing the deal to be getting very wealthy at the same time. They don't want to have somebody going broke running the deal. That's one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. People are like, well, I'm not going to make any money. Like, okay, so when this deal gets hard or you've got to hire people, you'll have no capital to do that. So that's not good for the investor. And so you need to have an appropriate amount. Like, it's a very important thing to think about this, the appropriate amount that does well for everybody. And so there should be very healthy fees. Maybe not RJR Nabisco when they did the merger. I mean, that was like, that merger just kept getting bigger and bigger because it was about the fees. Wall Street's like, ooh, and KKR and all these guys that were doing this deal, they're like, well, if we make this a $60 billion deal versus a $20 billion deal, then we get to make $5 billion in fees. Like, there comes a point where it's out of control. It's like, what are we actually creating value doing? Nothing. We're just making the number bigger. So I think that's where appropriate comes into play. It's not about a big or small. It's about appropriate.
That's a good book, by the way. If anyone hasn't read that, Barbarians at the Gate, it's a phenomenal 100% book.
100%. Totally agree.
That's a good point, though. But there is an extent, right? Yeah, like, there's egregious fees, but you need to be justly paid. Like you said, like, what if I wasn't getting paid and the deal got hard? I don't have resources to fix the problem.
Yeah. And you remember Michael Milken back in the 80s doing it. I mean, I don't remember him because I wasn't that young, or I mean, I wasn't that old, but we do know about him. And he was going to pay himself $1 billion a year as his bonus just for what he was doing, because he basically created junk bonds. And it was funny. He ended up paying himself $500 million because he just thought $1 billion seemed inappropriate. And I was like, I don't know how either one of those doesn't sound crazy big.
Right.
The reality is he created so much value. If you're a hedge fund and you're doing something, you make your 20% and you make $3 billion as your hedge fund manager fee, and you made your investors $20 billion in returns, whatever it is, I don't have any problem with that. I know Elizabeth Warren and AOC have a problem, but they're knucklehead.
Of course they do.
That's because they're just entitlement-minded buffoons. The people that understand capitalism, not statism, not like, let's subsidize the big companies, but true capitalism, free market capitalism, when you understand that, it is about value creation. If I'm creating value, you get to choose whether you want to do business with me. You get to choose whether you want to invest with me. There's no force. This isn't Russia. There's no gun to your head. And so when we think about it that way, it's like, okay, well, if I'm creating value, I don't look at somebody's fees and go, well, you're making too much money. I'm in a deal and the founder of the deal is probably going to make between $200 and $400 million in this deal over the next 6-7 years. And good on him. I'll make my little part of being a limited partner. Anybody that's rational that he wants to do business with is not going to be even thinking about his $400 million. They're going to be, if anything, they're going to think, I hope he makes $500 million, because that means I did even better. Exactly. So there's an alignment of interests. And that's one of the other things about appropriate fees. Is there an alignment of interests?
Exactly. I was going to say that both, all parties have to be aligned. And the way I like to say it is, yeah, I'm projected to make this amount of money, but that's just a cushion for you. That means, like, if anything goes wrong, you're generally preferred equity, so you're going to get paid first. So that's just a cushion for you. And these are all projections. So we're always trying to be aligned. And yeah, I agree with you on that. I could go on this topic forever, though.
It's a big, big topic. It's a big deal for most people.
But is there anything I missed on EQRPs that you want to bring up that I haven't asked?
I think it's really important for people to get the information. I wrote this book and I actually consolidated the book into a report. So I'm happy to give people a copy of that. You can download it on your phone. And so this is the thing that people have to remember is sometimes things apply to you and sometimes they're going to apply to your friend or your family. And you want to have the ability to share because that makes everybody richer, not just in money, but in knowledge. And so this is one of those things where somebody listening or watching is going to say, oh, you know what? I wish I'd known that a month ago because I know my friend just did this thing. And guess what? They're hammered. They did an IRA deal with real estate, or they didn't even know. They'd rather buy gold, but they didn't know. So they bought mutual funds. So getting that information, being able to share it and spread the word is the biggest gift. I say that's the same thing as love. When you give love, you don't actually, it doesn't take it away from you. It just expands the pie. And that's what this information is all about.
I love it. So where can they find you then? Where can they get this? Because I'm definitely going to check it out too.
Yeah. So the easiest way to get it is go to EQRP website and just and get a copy of it. When you ask for the book, what's going to happen is you're going to get a report. So it's EQRP.co. Just click on the book. You'll get a copy of the book shipped out to you. We'll send it to you. We're not going to charge you $7.95 for shipping. I don't like that model. Look, I want to help you and I'm not going to create any barrier. You just got to go there and request it. At the same time, you're going to get an email summary. It's the report on the EQRP and you'll be able to learn more. If you've got employees, there's resources on the website where you can see how you can use this with employees. So whatever your situation is, it's going to work. I mean, it's really that simple. Just go to eqrp.co and get a copy of it. Take you about 2 minutes and might even save you $20,000 or $50,000 or $400,000.
More than 15%. Love it. All right. Before I let you go, there's a question I want to ask. I generally always ask this one because it's not only a real estate investment podcast, but also personal finance, right? Because that's a big part of everything anyone does, not what you make, but what you keep. So if you could go back in time, if you had a time machine, what would be one piece of financial advice you'd tell your younger self?
You're going to be wrong more than you think. And so, yes, I remember a bunch of us were in a mastermind. We were making tons of money, millions of dollars and having a good time. And one of our mentors said, you guys need to take some of this off the table, like stop putting all your chips in on red every time. And he'd lost $100 million back in the 80s. And we're like, yeah, but we're smarter than you. That's basically what I think what we thought at the time. And we all got our asses kicked. We were all in. And so like in 2008, when I lost 25 million, I only had 20 million in assets and I lost 25. So you can imagine the math. It was ugly.
Yeah.
Part of that is I was basically all in. I got to have the experience of living out of the back of my truck. That's very uncomfortable, sleeping in a suitcase in the back of your SUV. So part of the advice, and how do you get there? Because when you do well and you make a bunch of money, the problem, especially being young, but really at any point is young is brutal because your ego takes over and you're like, oh, I'm invincible. I'm 10 feet tall and bulletproof. Nothing can touch me because I'm so smart and I'm so good. When I hear these guys, I've been doing real estate investing for 18 years and I've never lost any money. And I'm like, you are lying. I mean, it's just like, it's not true. So, or you haven't done anything. Okay. You bought a rental house and you just happen to have gotten lucky. But if you've done anything of scale, at scale, how do you make sure that your ego doesn't get the best of you? You have balder, grayer, wiser mentors that you pay that are around you and you keep paying them. Even when you think you know everything, you keep paying them. And then you listen to what the hell they say. Because a lot of people, I had mentors and then I stopped. I was like, I don't need mentors. I am the mentor. Okay. Even being, I am a mentor. I also have mentors. I have older, grayer, not really balder because I'm about as bald as it gets, but there's like, I've got the balder guys and I listen to them. And sometimes I don't like what they say and I do it anyway. It's because the humility is part of the process. You get your butt kicked and then you're like, okay, maybe I should definitely pay attention to the stuff that I don't know or the things that I know that just ain't so. Like you got to be mindful of that stuff and you got to have other people because we're too close to ourselves. We can't see it. I mean, even Tiger Woods has a coach. Tom Brady has a coach.
Michael Jordan. Yeah, all of them.
It doesn't matter who it is. Anybody at the top of their game has coaches. There's no exception. Everybody's got them.
Yeah, it goes to our point earlier. We don't know about everything. We think we do and we self-sabotage, but we don't. And I always preach the mentor thing. I don't care what part of life or career you're in, you need to have a mentor and most likely be leveling up mentors, right, as you grow. But they're definitely necessary just because, yeah, you don't know everything and they've probably been around a lot longer than you. So
totally agree.
Cannot agree more. Well, Damian, thank you so much for your time, man. I really appreciate it. I know you're a busy guy, but a lot of value on this that personally I took, but I know also the listeners will get as well. So thank you.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right, listeners, we'll catch you later.
Hey, this is Sean Winslow. After being in the financial service industry for years and having candid conversations with good people just like you, I realized that so many of us are wanting an investment strategy that provides solid returns and consistent income without the bumps in the road. There's little known secret that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. There is investment out there that is less volatile and the returns are stronger. Get more details by going to greenbriercg.com and clicking on the free e-report. And by the way, if this show has provided you any value, then feel free to leave an honest written review and of course share it with a friend who needs it. See you next week for another great show.